All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and special guest in the studio with us today, Corey Basaraba.
Nice. Nailed it.
Yeah. I was going to go with Bossa Nova, and I was like, no, that's better. Probably heard that joke before. So, Corey Basaraba, welcome to the show. And just a heads up for those listening in podcast land and watching on video, Jonathan's in the middle of a move, so his internet's a little wonky. He's going to try to hang with us, but there may be some delays or something that sounds a little off. It's not too many beers. It's just internet connection.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. So, welcome to the show, Corey.
So excited to be here, Sean. This is great.
I was trying to think before the show, is like, how long have we known each other and how did we meet? I could not put my finger on like the point.
Yeah, I was talking with Bill about this, and I hired you to help me with copy for the Joe Vitale launch.
Right.
That's okay. How. And I can't remember who recommended you. I think it might have been someone that was in the AWAI crowd, and I was reaching out. And anyway, they put me on to you, man, and we had a conversation. And I needed some help with that launch, and you came on board, and we had a lot of common ground, and we've kind of bounced on projects back and forth but that must have been 2008 or 9.
Yeah.
It had like around that time. Yeah. When I was doing product launches, whenever Jeff Walker did that training. So
yeah, I remember that. I've still got the signed DVD case or CD case back here from Joe Vitale.
Nice.
So that's cool. And then we met in person in Denver. We were working on a project for the Y company. I don't even know if they're still around. Not our fault if they're not.
That's right.
they had their own issues. Pretty cool idea. I don't know if it ever got anywhere, went anywhere or not. But we hiked a mountain together.
Yep.
14. That my first 14er.
Yeah, you hiked it. I dragged my ass up it.
Yeah.
But it was a great day.
Yeah, that was. Can't remember the name of the mountain, but it's like the closest one to Boulder, one to Denver.
Grays Peak, maybe?
Yeah, Grays Peak, that's it.
Yeah.
And we've been back and forth. We've kind of been in the same pattern. We've got some of the same interests. So it's really been kind of cool it's been 10 or 12 years now. So that's pretty wild.
Yep.
So I'm excited to have you on. And we'll get into your background a little bit, but we'll say this. I was just glancing through Corey's stuff. There's some stuff in here I didn't know or didn't remember anyway. But done a lot of different stuff, from selling vacuum cleaners. So man after my own heart, I sold Cutco knives at one point.
Yeah.
Had your own sign shop at one point. Then you discovered direct response marketing. How about this, Jonathan? He sold $800,000 worth of DVDs in 9 months back in 2007 in the golf niche. You probably bought one of those, Jonathan.
I'm sure I did.
I recognize you. You're that troublemaker in customer service, right?
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
So, all right, we'll get into that a little bit. We're going to be talking about hero funnels today with Corey, which is what he specializes in now. He's taken all of his past experience and now he specializes in, we're calling them hero funnels now. But before we get into that, we're going to jump into some beer and some beverages. So, Corey, did you bring a beverage today?
I did. And I am a total amateur when it comes to beer, even though I lived for the last 7 years in Bellingham, Washington, when there's a microbrewery on every corner up there. But I got this, whatever this is, sent to me as a welcome gift when I joined Baby Bathwater Mastermind. It's an amazing group of people. So they sent me this Pacifico Clara.
Yeah, I've seen that can before. I've never
have
had
you?
Yeah.
Me neither. So it's been in my fridge for the last 4 months. Uh-oh. And I cracked it a few minutes ago and we're gonna see what happens. And then to make me look cool, my neighbor gave me an actual beer glass because I had nothing of the sort. So
there you go.
Imposter package complete.
Hey, as long as you can drink it, we're all good. So, so I've got, I've got one called Imperial Sweet Fang.
Nice.
It's got a werewolf on it. So it's gotta be good. So this is from what's the name of this brewery? Panther Island Brewing up in Fort Worth, Texas. So kind of a local beer, 3-4 hours away from here in Austin. 11% ABV, and with a name, it's a chocolatey peanut butter milk stout. So this could be good or bad. I don't know. Could be really sweet. I'm a little worried about how sweet it might be. So that's me and Corey. Jonathan, what you got over there? You said you had a good one.
Yeah, I've got a Dragon Stout. It is a, it's actually it's an original Jamaican Dragon Stout Fire. Hopefully wow. I'm not blurring right now and you can see that.
Not really.
10% but we're good. ABV.
I feel like I'm in a D&D game. We got dragons and werewolves.
I know. This is good. You step up your game.
Yeah.
So when I picked this up this afternoon, because I was making a mad rush back to the office, I stopped at the local liquor establishment and I picked this up because it looked new. And the guy said, boy, you're going to love this one.
Nice. So
pretty dark.
Yeah. You like that when you go to the counter after you kind of can't figure out what to get. And then they're like, oh, that's good.
Yes.
Makes you feel good. Yeah. Yep. So, gentlemen, cheers.
Cheers.
Chink.
Oh, that is sweet. That is like perfect for Easter, because that's like a mouthful of chocolate and peanut butter right there.
Right.
It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Sounds really good. Like, but you're only drinking one of these. Like this is heavy. It's sweet, but it's really good.
That's your dessert beer.
Yeah. So, Corey, you just sent me a message. What time is it there for you?
It's 1:48.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We got plenty of time.
Yeah.
So, all right. So usually at this point, Corey, we give these a rating. 1 to 5 pints is our rating. So you can, think about that. I'm going to give this a 4. It's probably higher for taste, but for drinkability, I have to bring it back down because you're just not going to sit and drink this. This is definitely like a dessert beer. Very sweet, very imperial stout like. So I give it a solid 4. Got a number there. We'll come back to you, Corey. We'll let Jonathan go. Let's see if the establishment owner steered him in the right direction.
Well, I'm going to give this, never given a 5 on this show. Uh-uh. But today,
uh-oh,
we're giving a 5.
Oh, we got to have some applause for that or something.
Here we go.
There we go. I like it.
Wow.
We've always teetered right on the edge of 5, like 4, 9, all that. But I'm giving this. This is so good. So good.
So like nice 190 episodes in, we finally found a 5.
A 5. This is Dragon Stout Fire. It is on fire. Really good.
What's it taste? Is it like a,
it's really, it has a nice sweet taste, but it's not overly sweet. Good balance, nice aftertaste.
Yeah.
Just a really good finish to it.
Cool.
Like I said, I could drink another one of these, but it's 10% ABV. So I'm probably not going to, but if I didn't know better, I would, you know, cause
or if you were in the middle of a move.
Like it's high gravity, you know?
Yeah. Be packing the wrong boxes and the wrong order and
moving them into someone else's house.
Exactly. Hey, there you go.
So Corey, what do you give? 1 to 5 pints.
Oh man, I'm going to call it a 4. First of all, I want to say I'm thrilled that I was here for the first 5 on the show. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Like whatever happens now is, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. That's it. And I'm going to order me a case of that dragon. So, you know, I'm going to give it a 4. This is the kind of beer you could just drink all afternoon. It's real smooth flavor, no funny tastes. It just was immediately satisfying. So, I'd buy it again.
You got to have some of that in the fridge for sure.
Yeah, this is a drinking beer. If you're going to just spend the afternoon out in the sun talking and drinking, this is one you want to use.
All right. When I come visit, stock up on that.
Okay.
Stock up. So
I'm heading your way in August. So
we'll are you?
Yeah, maybe we can work something out.
Oh, heck yeah.
So
what part? I missed the part of the country you're in, Corey.
I'm in Washington State, and I'm down about 90 minutes southeast of Seattle, down near Mount Rainier, middle of nowhere.
Oh, rainy. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Poised to explode at any moment. So,
is it really?
Yeah. In geographic time, who knows?
Yeah. But, right.
Mount St. Helens popped off.
You call it rainy. So. You call it rainy. Did you just call it rainy?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No Washingtonian would ever call it rainy.
Yeah, they do.
Do they? All right.
Seattleans, I think, do.
Over rainy. All right. Well, I'll take your word for it.
So I don't know.
Now, does he know our other guest that's out that way?
RC?
RC.
Did you ever met RC? I don't think you did. Yeah. So. He's up in Kirkland. So just north of Seattle. But
wow.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever introduced you to, but you'd like him. Y'all be
I'm sure there'd be some great conversation going there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. in fact, I probably need to introduce you with your whole Hero Funnels here. So, speaking of Hero Funnels, first of all, give us a little bit of your background, kind of how you got from, you know, average person, you know, that was supposed to get a job, you know, go to college, get a job, get married, you know, live that life. And then you end up in our world, in the listener's world of this direct response, persuasion, sales, marketing crap.
Right.
Like this alternate universe. So how did you make the jump from regular life to this world?
Well, I grew up on a farm in Western Canada, and I learned right away that I hate physical labor. 7, 8 years old out there picking rocks in the field in the sun, and I'm like, hell no, never again. And when my friends were all getting jobs in high school, McDonald's, $3.50 an hour, a buddy of mine said, yeah, well, I made $250 last night. I'm like, doing what? Selling vacuums. I was like, oh. So that got my attention. So that entered me into the whole world of sales and persuasion. And I realized, wow, I can just talk. And if I'm good at it, I can make money. Mm-hmm. So that's how that whole thing started. And then raised by entrepreneurial parents, my mom, my dad, uncles and aunts, they were all running businesses. And so I grew up around that kind of mindset. There wasn't really any pressure for me to go to college or take a straight path. So that part was really good. I'm really lucky from that perspective. And so got married young, 22. And I was in a small town in Washington. My wife is from here. I met her. And this guy had a sign shop. I thought it was pretty cool because I grew up as an artistic kid. I was always drawing and really thought that was my life. I was going to be a comic book artist. And I spent a lot of time kind of down that path. And then I thought, oh, sign painting, that's kind of cool. I can be creative and visual. And so it was for sale. So I gave him $1,500 and he gave me 3 paintbrushes and some cans of paint and some plywood and said, here you go. So so that was my first acquisition, let's say. Yeah, taught myself how to hand letter. It was great. And then this was early 90s. So computers were just hitting and vinyl cutting. I taught myself how to run graphics and cut vinyl. And I really liked working with these entrepreneurs who were coming in for their signs because they were like, well, I want to grow. I need my sign to do X, Y, Z. I had discovered J. Abraham right around then. So I was just all kind of coming together. I was working with entrepreneurs. And that led to graphic design, which led to late 90s and now .com 1.0 shows up. Mm-hmm. Taught myself how to program so I could build websites. My first website, I sold it to the local real estate agency for $300. I said, I'll build you a website. And
cha-ching.
Cha-ching, dude. I was living the life. So I went back and learned how to code it up. And I found myself working for a Fortune 500 company doing support around websites. And it's just been a series of this mix of salesmanship, creativity, technology. And as I acquired practical skills in all those, you know, when you get into marketing, there's always a gap between the great marketing ideas. You know, you can go read scientific advertising and you can read all the classic marketing and copywriting books, but then you actually have to get it done in a business with a lot of moving parts and tech. Mm-hmm. And I was able to kind of glue all those pieces together. So that led me into my first internet gig, which, as you mentioned, was a man, when you get old, these stories get long, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Man, I hit 50 last week. So
you congratulations, know, brother.
Man, I made it. But yeah, they do. But
yeah, I'm 2 weeks right. away coming up soon. So that, yeah, I ran into this guy who was selling a golf ebook for $150. I'm like, what? That's expensive ebook. He goes, yeah, I sold 1,000 copies. I was like, dude. And I'm like, first of all, I'm like, where's your video? And I just met this guy. We're having a phone call. He's like, I got no video. He goes, and I'm like, look, we just met. You don't know me, but I'm going to raise money and we're going to go shoot video and we're going to sell some DVDs. And he's like, yeah, whatever. But I did. And we spent 5 days on the front lawn of this really fancy golf club down in Florida. And I would just ask him questions from behind the camera. And then I would move behind the camera and he would answer me. And that's how we, right? Yeah. So the point
was
of
that
all
based,
is,
was that, yeah? Was that based on like Mike Koenig or whoever that was, the 10-10-10 that was going around about that time?
Would have been similar time frames. I just knew that he had everything in his head.
Yeah.
Right. And if I could just ask him good questions, he would say it and then we could edit the crap out of it and put it together.
What was the name of that product? I'm just curious because I probably do own it.
That's Golf Swing Control. Tracy okay. Reed was the guy who created it. Brilliant, brilliant guy. Amazing stuff. It worked like crazy. Mm-hmm. But then I sat down and I had bought John Carlton's course back in 2001 and I had all this copywriting, like I'm going to write me a letter. So I wrote this golf letter and wrangled some affiliates and set up all the tech. And it was me for 9 months and we had a good run. We did about 900,000 total sales, just a $99 DVD set. We had no back end and it was all affiliates, but it worked. And it gave me the background to understand the reality of taking a concept and bringing it to life and selling it on the internet. And then I just kept, you know, from there, I went on to product launches, came across Jeff Walker. That sounded like a great gig. Mm-hmm. Did some of those, and that's how we met. And, yeah. You know, those funnels, consulting, copywriting, just trying to help on. The theme has always been helping entrepreneurs get their business to work for them because they sweat, they risk, they put it all on the line. They got families that are relying on them. I watched my family do that. And I went, if I have a talent that'll help entrepreneurs be successful, that's what's kind of carried me through all these variations on my journey and still doing it today.
Yeah. That's what we talk about on this show a lot. Like, you know, it's not one skill like copywriting that's going to like really move the needle for you. It's knowing how to use copy, but you got to have sales to sell a client that can use copy or to, right. And copy and sales are slightly different, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's interactive where copy's more one way typically. Except for like numerology.com. There's this kind of creepily like interactive. But then there's like the tech skills, like you said, like getting it out to the world. Like, how do you do that? Either you hire somebody or you pick up all these little skills. Jonathan's done it. You know, he's printed books and written books and hired VAs. Like there's so much stuff in this entrepreneurial world where persuasion and sales is required, whether you're negotiating deals or hiring people or whatever. Yes. And all that stuff just kind of, comes together in our lives. You know, it's one of the reasons I think I was successful as a copywriter. My copy's good, but it's, you know, it's not A-lister, but I was good at sales. So I could get clients and I could make good money and it kind of fed itself. So, so tell us about this, what you're doing now. Like we said before we started, it's like, what do we call them? And you said, well, I'm kind of calling them hero funnels. So, tell us kind of the concept of what a hero funnel is in your world.
Sure. Well, before I do this, I want to talk about, I think it's attributed to Picasso, but he said, great artists steal, right? And so I've been stealing ideas from all of these amazing influences. So when it comes to persuasion, fundamentally, you're taking a total stranger and turning them into someone who will trust you with their credit card.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you're doing. And so at its heart, I'm always aware of that. That's a journey for somebody. So they woke up today and they're feeling a certain way about their life, or they got a problem in their business, or they're trying to lose weight, or whatever it is. They're here and they want to be somewhere else. They want to be farther along. They want to be thinner or richer. So they're, and all of us, we're on our life journey at any moment. And so then we intersect with a piece of marketing. And if that marketing resonates with where we want to go, then we're going to give them a little bit of our attention. Mm-hmm. And then if the next piece of our attention meets with something interesting and intriguing and there's empathy, it'll bring us along. And the whole time we're just crossing our fingers, hoping that this isn't bullshit, that this will actually help us out and that this is legitimate, right? And so when you enter a funnel, which starts from the first ad click, who knows what, it's this constant evaluation. Am I going to go on this journey or not? And so when you look at storytelling and screenwriting, you know, and going back forever, this idea of the hero's journey, that, you know, we have these stages that we're trying to get through. And there's a classic where you refuse the call, and everyone talks about, you know, in Star Wars, Luke Skywalker says, no, I don't want to go. I can't go. You know, I'm stuck here farming moisture from the atmosphere and, you know, reluctant. And then, you know, tragedy happens and he's on his way. And so, you know, people enter our funnel. They are not interested. They're very reluctant, but mm-hmm. there's this hope that maybe they'll get where they want to go. And so what I found is if we take that and we take your funnel and we diagram it out and we start to overlay, okay, what are we doing here, right? If there's a gap, or if our average order value isn't high enough, or our upsells aren't working, I look at that and I go, okay, well, how does this help them with their journey? And usually there's some kind of disconnect, like, oh, we shoehorned an upsell in there because we had it available, or it's all we had written. And so the closer you can kind of layer this through when you're trying to troubleshoot or fix a funnel, I found it to be helpful over time. And so it's just kind of a metaphor. Yeah.
So what came to my mind was kind of a storyboard. Mm-hmm. And you also kind of, most of our listeners are on audio on a podcast, but sure. You also did your hands like out to the sides, you know, so which is a funnel path, but it's also kind of the way we see a timeline or things like that, right?
Yes.
So do you see it? Do you like craft the entire story first and then go back and fill in the products? Is that what I'm hearing? I may be jumping ahead, but like you say, okay, this is the ideal customer or the probable customer journey mm-hmm. that we'd want them to take. Just kind of unpack that for me. Like, how do you begin to develop this as sure. opposed to like landing page diagram, opt-in page diagram, you know,
right.
Little envelopes, you know, the Russell Brunson method, right? Just drawing all these little symbols that are, it's a funnel step and it's a funnel diagram, but there's no soul to it.
Right.
Dude, it's you all nailed product it. Base.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a great question. So those are all just containers.
Right.
They're just containers. And then you have to pour stuff into those containers that makes them come to life. Mm-hmm. Right. And so by taking your funnel diagram, because a lot of times my clients will already have a funnel of some kind. They're in business, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got something happening now. So I'll look at that and, okay, well, where is it not working? And then if we literally overlay, if we have a diagram of their funnel and we overlay, what I map out is, okay, the customer's here. What does that look like for them? How do they feel right now? What problems are they struggling with? Like really standard, you know, avatar. But let me understand, what's their emotional state today? What do they want? And then what are the roadblocks along the way? What challenges do they have to overcome? And then do we see a connection between what their next challenge is and what the start of the funnel looks like? Is it addressing that next challenge? And then when they get to the, you know, so let's say it's a Facebook ad, can we meet them where they're at, build some desire to go take the next step? Then they get to the landing page. Okay, what's that landing page doing to move them forward? Because we have to get them to a point where they feel this combination of desire and this emotion that we all get when we know a deal is going to close or a prospect is ready to make. It's an emotional state usually. So we're trying to create that emotional state. And so they give us their first payment. And now typically if we're buying cold traffic, which is what most, that's kind of the world I'm living in, is how do we scale with paid traffic? Well, you need to get a couple more sales from them over the next few minutes, right? Upsell one, upsell two. Right. And so then we're just trying to continue that. And by using this metaphor of a hero's journey and understanding there's stages and that we have to, it just helps us troubleshoot and fix gaps in our persuasion. It's like another way of, it's really about troubleshooting. Funnels are, funnels are popping up 10,000 a day all over the world. People are building funnels, right? Having a funnel doesn't mean it's going to work. So a lot of times I'm meeting people whose funnel is broken, and this is where we have to fix it. And this is a tool I use for fixing it.
Jonathan, do you have any questions? I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah. So give us some examples where I'm curious, where do you see some areas where people's funnels are broken that need to be fixed?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to sit with that for a second. Well, a lot of times they're not aware of where their customer's really starting, right? So they're running ads to an audience that either already knows what they're saying. So this comes back to Eugene Schwartz and or levels of awareness. What is your market already? Are they looking for a problem for their back pain, right? Are they looking for a certain brand? Like, what are they looking for? Do they already know about you, or do they already know about your offer? So there's, I find a lot of business owners don't understand that concept. So they're running ads that are not meeting the client where they're at. So it's the first place there's a disconnect, right? They don't really know what's going on with their client. So their first ad is not connecting with them. So that's where, start with that. The next big disc. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just go a little deeper there. So would you think, do you think that a lot of the business come to you said they're already up and running? So do you find that a lot of them are selling to kind of, not necessarily cold, but when they go to cold traffic, does that shift a lot of times? Like the way they were selling that got them so far?
Right.
Yeah.
Does that, does the avatar change? And like, so they just don't see it as a business owner?
That's, yeah. If you think of the evolution, especially in online business, a lot of time they'll start with affiliates or warm traffic.
Right.
So they either, they have a product and they got to start selling it. They'll go to people they know, or they'll find affiliates who have lists, and they'll do well with that. What they're not taking into account is how much of an impact it makes when you're getting a warm referral. When an affiliate says to their list, hey, here's a great workout program that I like. Well, that person who clicks is already coming with a lot of belief, and they're a lot more optimistic than someone who's never heard of you, have no idea who you are, and they see your ad on Facebook. So it's a great point. A lot of times they're not prepared for the difference in what you have to change about your first messaging to deal with truly cold audiences and how much work that takes.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that firsthand. You know, the agency I'm with right now, it's a tough concept for a lot of business owners to get, or even if they've done well with cold traffic, they've done well to like the first 1% of the market,
right?
Which is like low hanging fruit, you know, pretty easy to convince. You know, it's like when you were selling vacuum cleaners, Corey, like if you go on 100 appointments, you can sell one if you don't have any sales skills at all, right? Somebody's correct. Just like kind of, you just kind of stumble into it, right?
Absolutely.
But if you want to get into that 25, 30%, you know, historical sales, you know, you got to learn some sales skills. If you want to get really good and close one out of two, like there's all kinds of stuff you have to do, and the approach is different, and your techniques are different, and you got to have heart, you got to be able to overcome more and more skeptical people as the market scales and grows. And I think in my experience, at the agency I'm with right now, a lot of businesses, that's a hard switch for them to flip in their brain and get. Because they had just enough success with kind of cold traffic that they don't understand why the same offer doesn't work.
Dude, it's a great metaphor. And it's exactly what happens is the farther up from the bullseye you get, the more skill you need to persuade those outer rings, right? And there's always people that are just never going to buy. So you got those people at the outside of your target that just, they're never going to buy, but it's all those people in the middle who would buy if they heard the right message, if they had the right amount of proof. That's where your opportunity is to scale your business, is getting better and better at that skill of bringing them in, addressing their concerns. So that's exactly what's happening is, and that just, it's hard work, and it's hard to find people who are good at doing that work.
Yeah. You know? Or even or even understand the work needs to be done, to be honest. Yeah,
it's true.
I mean, like, it's true. Like a lot of people don't. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the whole tipping point curve, right? You get the early adopters. So there's the easy sales. You know, you could probably overlay a bell curve very similar, you know, that there's going to be there's some people that never convert.
Right.
There's some people that will convert with just about anything you put in front of them. They're right. Just buyers, right? And you got that whole big middle section, which is 80% of the market, that needs some varying levels of proof and, you know, testimonials, introductions, you know, from affiliates, whatever it is. So cool.
Yep.
All right. So I was trying to think of another question, but so tell us kind of how you bring somebody on. They've got a product. Do you find that the product is like, do you ever have to change the product completely just because it doesn't work and you have to go back to the drawing board?
Yeah. And that's painful for the entrepreneur who loves their product.
I bet they love hiring you and then hearing, yeah, you need to change everything, man. This sucks.
This is where, honestly, guys, the persuasion skills that we've learned doing sales, it's critical when you're managing a relationship with the client.
Yes.
Because you have to persuade them of many things for their own good. Or if you're coaching, right? Or you're like, you can't just come in with a hammer and say, start smashing things or you're not going to last very long. So yeah, I have a wonderful client now. She has a business. She helps ladies in menopause. She had a kind of a higher ticket coaching program that she was very successful launching. But her dream was to reach more people and to get to larger audiences, and that product and that structure just wasn't going to work. She wasn't able to take cold audiences and get them to buy $1,000 program. So we had to like deconstruct it and put together some different offers. And, you know, she was hoping it would take 3 months. We're at 9 months now, and it's finally happening. But when it happens, it's going to be so much bigger.
Right.
But most entrepreneurs don't have that patience or the budget to, not even the budget, mostly patience to go through all the steps, you know. But yeah, sometimes you got to start from scratch. It just depends on what your goals are. What do you want from your business? Like, she could have a very comfortable lifestyle business. Most people could. You can skim the cream off the top of your market with Facebook ads, and you can make yourself, you know, six figures a year, you know, pretty comfortably and easily. If you want to get to that 2 million to 10 million, you need really sophisticated marketing in today's. That's my experience anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've told copywriters, I've told, you know, sales, like, you can get to 250 with just a little hustle and 250 a year. You could, hey, that's a good living. Like, it's, absolutely, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, I was really pissed off a couple of weeks ago about, I kept seeing the word scale so much.
Right.
It's like, the point of business is not necessarily to scale. Like, that's right, not a prerequisite for any business. Now, a lot of businesses want to, but you know, you don't have to. Like, there's plenty of businesses that if you just kind of provide for yourself and your family and serve your customers, that's honorable and noble and fine.
100%.
Yeah. There's nothing that says you have to scale, you know? And I think that's like the buzzword right now, you know, is it, man, you got to scale.
Yeah.
10X, baby.
10X hustle. Well, that's the coach in you coming out. And that's great advice. Like, absolutely. You know,
but you know, yeah. But if you want, like, so yeah, you can, I agree. It's like, you can get to that 250, nice six figure, maybe even more depending on, you know, the mix of products and services and automations that you have. But yeah, if you want to break that million, 2 million, it's another game. Like it's, and then especially 10 million, like 10 million is a whole nother.
Right.
Level beyond that, where you know, you need operations, you need financial, you know, chief financial officers coming in and all that kind of stuff, because it's inventory control and cash flow and like all the stuff that comes in at those levels. I remember back when I had a handyman business, it was like I could make pretty good money as a handyman by myself, and I would get busy and I'm like, well, I could hire somebody. But then I have to spend 20% of my time or 30% of my time teaching them or watching them or helping them or,
yeah.
And every dollar that I earn from that point forward has less margin.
Yep.
And that's true for most businesses as you scale. Like, every dollar is going to have up to a point, and then you get to a point where I think it flips again. But, you know, and that 0 to 10 million, those dollars get eaten up pretty quick.
Right. So. Yep. It's
easily,
you know, it's so funny because we're told just get your laptop and head to the beach, start your internet business. It's like,
yeah, don't worry about the sand, baby. Yeah. Don't worry about the sand getting down on the keyboard.
That's right.
Not a problem.
That's right. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
What are you guys seeing with challenges for the people you're working with, and where are they getting stuck? You seeing any commonalities in terms of people who are trying to be successful online or in their persuasion?
I've got an answer, Jonathan. I'll let you go first if you've.
Yeah, I think it goes back to, and I'm trying to limit my questions just because I know my internet's spotty. But I will say, I think there's a disconnect sometimes. You know, Sean and I have talked about this. You got to meet customers where the conversation's already taken place. And I think that a lot of times, you know, we start out on the wrong foot with not understanding the conversations that's going on in our customer's mind. So we're probably entering at the wrong point, you know, and let's take golf, for example. You know, that golf product that you were talking about sounds pretty interesting. I probably bought several products that were similar to that. I don't even remember if I may have bought that product, but, but the conversation that's going on in your understanding that what's going on in your prospect's mind. Like I had a friend of mine that I worked with years ago. He was in the fitness industry and he was also like golf, but he wanted to like position himself as like, you know, kind of creating a fitness program for golfers. And I'm thinking, that's not what most golfers, I realize that's important, but that's not the conversation that's going on in most golfers' minds, is that I need to get fit.
Right.
To improve my distance or improve my game or shave a few strokes off. That's not what they're thinking. They want a quick fix and they don't want to know that they've got to improve their core or improve their physique in any way. That's
flexibility. That's
not, yeah, exactly. That's not the conversation that they're having. So
yeah, I think it was Clayton Makepeace, Corey, that said, you know, the slap test, the 3 a.m. slap on the forehead test. He's like, nobody wakes up at, using your example, Jonathan, nobody wakes up at 3 a.m. slaps their forehead. It's like, oh my God, if I was just more fit, my golf game would be better.
That's right.
Like that's, you maybe the elite,
yeah,
you know, PGA Tour guys, they're like,
sure,
oh, these guys are putting on muscle. They're driving farther. They're going right. Deflect. Maybe I need, that's a different crowd. Mm-hmm. But for the average crowd, they're thinking, man, if I just could get that new driver I saw in the last, you know, golf magazine, Golf Digest last week,
absolutely,
without my wife knowing I need to put another club on my credit card.
And see, that's exactly what's going through their mind. They want quick. I mean, they want fast results, which means they'll pay more for fast results.
Yes, yeah.
They won't pay, you know, like fitness feels like I've got to commit to something that's long-term, you know,
work.
And it's just like work. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. That's the prospect doing the work instead of the product doing the work.
Exactly.
And everybody wants the product to do the work.
Exactly.
So much of this, I mean, I love that example of not entering the right conversation with your product. And that all comes back to thinking about your business from the very start before you even come up with your product. And you see there's so many skills to learn to be successful as an entrepreneur. And this is where I think it's overlooked, the strategy part, the part about, does the audience even want what I have to offer? Which is why I'm a big fan of things like, you know, Lean and that whole idea of minimum viable product and get it out to the market quickly and then iterate and test. I think that's really influenced a lot of entrepreneurs to have a different mindset. A lot of these people who are starting tech companies now, or that's in the culture. That information is common knowledge. If you scratch the surface a little bit, you go on Google for 10 minutes, you're going to find these ideas. And I think that's really helpful. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, when before, you know, pre-internet, man, where do you learn that stuff? Who teaches you about these things? You just start in your business and doing your best. Right. So if you're not doing it now, you don't really have any excuses, right? Like you just need to.
So you asked about some sticking points. One that I'm seeing is just Facebook continues to just change as a platform. You know, what works and what doesn't. Obviously, Facebook is interruption marketing, which I think a lot of people forget that. Right. It's not Amazon. It's not Google, where people are searching for answers. They're searching to disconnect from life and reality and go look at you know, other things and whatever. So starting there, mm-hmm. I mean, just if you just think about ad platforms, right? If I'm on even YouTube, I guess YouTube is split though, right? YouTube is half like sedation, just kind of wasting time, and half the world's second largest search engine. So you don't really know which way you're going there necessarily, but let's just say Google in general, you know, even Pinterest, like people are searching for things.
Correct.
Facebook, they're not. So just that, like knowing to start, am I interrupting somebody to get the message, yeah, or are they already looking and I'm going to tap into what they're looking for? That's night and day difference in a in a campaign.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's right. People treat them as if they're like kissing cousins or they're 10% different. No, like they're completely different species.
Yeah. And it's not,
like, it's like the guy out there in the street corner, what came up, Facebook is like the guy in the street corner twirling the sign for the pizza joint.
Yeah.
Right. And then Google is like people are walking into Penny's or walking into a mall.
Yeah.
Right. They're in there because they're looking for something and you can get them to the right place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you, because you said the journey kind of starts like right there, right? That first exposure, whether it's a banner ad, an email in somebody's, you know, box, although that's probably even second because however they got on the email list. So if we look at the, you know, the major platforms right now, Google, YouTube, Facebook, mm-hmm. Pinterest, those are really the top ones, I guess, online right now.
And there's a whole world of kind of native advertising that you'll see at the bottom of the news sites.
Right.
Is a huge traffic source, but very tricky to navigate, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then there's like, it's still interruption marketing because they're kind of reading what was ever on the homepage of those news sites. And they're kind of just,
correct,
you know, you're trying to match likenesses and things like that.
Yeah.
But that's still pretty much interruption marketing.
Sure.
So let's say we're on Facebook. I've been seeing a lot of stuff lately where longer copy is working better, mm-hmm. and where they're doing a lot more kind of pre-selling and selling in the ad.
Right.
And then you go to a very simple opt-in, very simple sales page / video. So the ad is doing a lot more work than it did a couple years ago. Are you finding that too?
Oh, 100%. In fact, it shocks me when I see people who are not running long copy ads on Facebook right now. Like, because if you think about the advantage of Facebook is you can tell a story. You've got some time. You've got this opportunity to actually give them some information, engage their emotions, get them involved. Whereas on a banner ad, you got to click. The mm-hmm. most you're going to get is curiosity.
Right.
So with your Facebook, there's a massive opportunity to pre-filter, to identify people who are good prospects and only bring them over to your site. Yeah, well-crafted, story-driven ads. To me, that's the superpower of really anyone who wants to be in this game for a while. If you don't understand how story works to engage a brain that doesn't want to be engaged, right? That hooks those people in, like this, all the BuzzFeed stuff, like that's where you win, because you get them in with a longer copy ad, tell them a good story, give them a reason to click. And then what's great about Facebook is it's its own funnel. Like my Facebook diagrams they look like my funnel diagrams used to look, because you've got first ad, then you can retarget them if they didn't opt in, then you can show them a different ad because now you know more about them and you can get more specific. And so you build these layers of persuasion in there. And but yeah, to answer your question, long copy is amazing on Facebook if you do it right.
It just occurred to me as you were saying that Facebook may be the first cold traffic ad platform that does not charge you for volume of message. Right? If you think about radio, TV, newspaper, Google even, I mean, YouTube, I guess, is similar. But you know, before you had to keep your message to a one page, you know, a full page magazine ad.
God.
And if you wanted more, you had to pay twice as much if you wanted a two page ad. Facebook, you can write as long as you want for the same money.
That's great. Absolutely. Yeah. Full page ad would cost you $20,000 in a magazine, or you can get a little corner for, Facebook, you're free to go. Like, write it. I mean, you can run a 30-minute infomercial on Facebook if you want to. It's like, great point.
So like, you know, you don't have to pay for that time. Once you get the attention, you don't have to pay, you know, the extra just to hold it. So, I mean, that's, and I don't think enough people are taking advantage of that.
Absolutely. It's a great, you know, it's interesting is I, been working with Time Life, probably seen their ads for the songs of the 70s for the last 30 years. Really big infomercial publishing company.
Heard those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sound familiar.
Yeah. So their model has been traditionally spend a lot of money developing a 30-minute infomercial. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, start over and do something else. And so we're really working on launching things digital first, to let them test it and try it out. Because the economics are so much greater. And what's interesting is they know that 2-minute spots don't work nearly as well as 30-minute spots at scale. And yet still a little hesitant to run long copy in their Facebook ads, still a little hesitant to have a long sales page, right? It's hard to let go of that idea that oh, on Facebook, it's you're just getting the click. It's different. And the people I work with, they totally get it. But there's layers of, you know, leadership and management who are like, well, that doesn't really jive with what we're used to. So it's a great opportunity for anyone who's listening to this and wants to get an advantage, is that that's an instant advantage, is use the space you've got.
Have you ever seen a situation where like, well, I won't say, I know there's always an exception, but as a rule, I remember Clayton saying when they went from, you know, 8 to 10 pages, the 10 pages did better. When they went from 10 to 12, 12 did better. 12 to 16, 16 to 20. Like every time they increased the length, results got better. Are you seeing that like on that first contact, that longer just tends to do better?
So if we balance it out for quality, meaning the copy is great, the story is great, and it's relevant, then yes, longer works better. Because like you said, you've got my attention. That's the hardest part, right? It's the hardest part. I'm reading your stuff. Keep me reading and get me persuaded. It's like if you had a live one-on-one sales appointment and you gave yourself, you know, you got 30 seconds to close this deal. Well, it makes no sense whatsoever, right? Right. Someone lets you in the door for your vacuum cleaner. Man, you got to fight to stay there and keep... And then you win, you know? So yeah, it's the same process. It's just digital, not face-to-face.
Which, I mean, goes back to like Jeff Walker's product launch. Right now, you know, Pedro Adeo with his challenges, which to me is just a live product launch. Like it's the same thing. It's just live. Those work because you're getting in front of the prospect longer and longer and longer. And, you know, the science of the brain is, familiar is safer and more comfortable. The more familiar somebody is, the safer they are, which is the trust. So the more you can be in front of a person in print, video, whatever, you're knocking out know and like, or know and trust at least.
Yes. Yes.
Like is, you know, still up for debate, right? Because you could watch somebody and you don't like them at all, but they're like a train wreck and you can't stop watching.
Sure.
So they'll still know and kind of trust you, even if they don't like you. But
yeah, people buy stuff from characters they don't like, but the products are so good.
Yeah.
They go, you're obnoxious, but I trust you. Like that can exist.
There's something about you that I know you know your stuff and, you know, all that.
Right.
So, yeah, that's interesting. So tell us, like, if you were to bring somebody, we've got about 10 minutes left. So, client comes to you, like what's the first thing you look at to know if like they're a fit for you and what you do in this kind of idea of this hero funnel, hero's journey type funnel?
Really, if they're trying to crack the code on cold traffic, they want to scale. And that's what I'm helping them do is, okay, if you want to scale, if you're serious, then we have to start closing the gaps in your funnel because you need a certain... It's just a simple math formula. Your average order value has to be high enough to cover your ad costs. And rather than trying to squeeze, people put all this pressure on their ads agency to try and perform, but oftentimes It's the funnel that's the problem.
Right.
And so really, someone who's looking to scale, they understand the dynamics of traffic and funnel, and they're willing to invest in closing those gaps. That's really what we do, is we look at the whole thing, get all the data from all the points in the funnel and say, okay, well, if we can, you know, get your upsell one to give you another $3 per order, and if we can do this, and we can, you know, and they want help engineering that, that's really what we do. And right now I'm partnering with clients who want to scale. I don't really do just fee-based work. It's we work with closely with them. We have traffic, we have funnels, we have data, copy. It's like we're bringing the whole package to a company that they just need that extra capacity to scale.
Are you finding you can still make that return on ad spend on day one, or is it starting to extend to day 7, day 30? Like what do people kind of need to be prepared for these days?
Yeah. Well, if it's a high ticket offer, if you're trying to sell $1,000 program, you can make money on day one for sure. You can make money in those leads pretty quickly. If you're trying to get them into an info product funnel, you know, with a $37, you really need to build your business around pay for the customer or get the customer for free. So don't make profit on day one, but make sure you've got a back end, a second or third or fourth purchase. So I try and get our money back in 30 days.
Okay.
I mean, again, how aggressive are you? Agora will sit on an investment for 6 months before they need their money back, right? Right. So it's business by business. But yeah, if your funnel is intelligent and you have a good product, you can acquire customers for free, which is a beautiful thing. That's never happened before. In the old days, you spent your money on the Yellow Pages or the newspaper ad, and you're out that $20,000 and you hope that you get customers. I think people are a little bit spoiled nowadays. They're like, well, right, I have to pay for my customer. It's like, yeah.
Well, I mean, and the biggest companies in the world push that, you know, return of acquisition cost further and further out. That's why they're the biggest companies. You know, insurance companies, it's as much as 2 years.
Right.
By the time they pay the agent and the advertising and cost of goods and all that stuff, they're willing to go 2 years.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Sure.
Because they know they'll keep those people for 5 or 10, right?
Right.
So they can do it.
Yeah.
Obviously, most businesses are not in a position, especially entrepreneurs, not in a position to do that. But I think the closer you can get to 30 days, you know, the better off you are.
Yeah.
You
know,
right. Makes everything easier.
You put your ad spend on a credit card, you got 30 days to get your money back. And look, I don't want to scare people off, but you can do well on day one. But everything is dependent on what's your business, what's your offer, is it good? You might just spend 3 months tweaking your offer to get to where you're breaking even on day one. But it's a grown up game. Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
You have ups. I was going to say, do you? One question I would have, you know, is do you have upsells? Do you have other products that you can, you know, you may get somebody on with the initial whatever you're offering through your ad, but are you able to parlay that into other, you know, other products and other opportunities?
That's exactly right.
Like, so, U-Haul this week while I was moving, I just go on there to get like a $20 trailer to move like a basketball goal and a few other things, and click one after another. They're like, how about blankets? How about this? How about that? How about this? You know, like 5 minutes later, before you actually just want to get to, you know, order the trailer, you know, for one day.
And that's a great, and when you do their trucks, I mean, it's even more because they're like, hey, do you need movers? Do you need boxes? Yeah. Do you want some movers. Help? Like, but to Corey's point, like that's exactly what people are kind of thinking about. Right. It's I bought a truck. I didn't think about maybe my buddies can't show up. Maybe it would be better to have movers. I never thought of that. Oh, and they're going to just show me where, you know, 5 movers in my area are. Mm-hmm. Give me a free quote based on the truck I'm buying. Like,
exactly.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So, but that's, and this brings up a good point, Corey, because I see a mistake all the time. Like when I'm doing funnel audits and things like this, mm-hmm. around the products people offer for upsells.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at somebody's main product and let's say they don't have an upsell and you want to come up with an upsell for them, I don't have an example right off the top of my head, but like if you told them they need to go to their lab and create something, Like, right. How do you describe the relation of the main product and the upsell? Like, does it need to be more of the same? Does it need to be completely different? Like, how would you explain to them what it, I have my way of doing it, but I don't want to put thoughts in your head yet. Sure. So like, how would you describe that?
Yeah. The way I think of it is, again, customer journey. What is this customer desperate for? And can we get them what they want faster, easier? Because upsell one is the critical link in the chain, right? Mm. So if you can show them how this next product fills a gap and it'll get you there quicker or easier, if you can do any of those two things in upsell one and they go, oh, this is actually going to help me out, you've got a real winner. And that comes from, I go back and I read the customer surveys, I read their language, I'll talk to 10 customers and I really understand, like you were saying, Jonathan, I understand the conversation in their head when they hit my landing page. What have they seen on Facebook? So what do they think the promise is? What do we just sell them? And then really think through what would make it amazing for them, right? And they'll tell you, basically just build it, design it to fit. And that's where the creativity comes in and your willingness to, that's how I think of it. It's probably not that much different than what you're thinking, Sean, but that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think, and you got to be careful because you don't want the upsell to all of a sudden make your main product less of what it was.
Yeah, that's the trick, right? You nailed it. Yeah, if they feel like, well, why? Yeah, if they feel like they, if they regret their purchase of 10 seconds ago at all,
yeah,
you've just wasted all of your time and energy to get that customer because they'll never buy anything else from you again.
Right, because you lost the trust. You just burned the trust bridge to the ground.
That's it.
So what I think of it like,
you know me, I always,
I think in metaphors, right? So I think of it as like a cafeteria. Your main offer is the entree.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then upsell one is like the best side. Like, what's your side to be? So I'm going through, I get my Salisbury steak at the cafeteria and I want some mashed potatoes to go with that. It's fit.
That's right.
It's not the same thing. It's not more of the same. I don't want more Salisbury steak as my first side. Right. You know, most days, some days maybe, right? You know, I want something different. And I'm like, okay, there's my comfort food that's going to make this even tastier. Sure. But now I feel a little guilty. Maybe I need some vegetables. So like, what would be the next thing to get my nutrition out of the meal, you know, and make this like an even more, like logically a better decision. Maybe that's upsell too. Like what would that look like? So I try to think of it like that. And then maybe there's a dessert, like, hey, if you really want to take this to the next level, here's a little dessert. That's upsell three or downsell three or whatever. Yeah. And that's been useful for me with clients because to let them see, look, it's not just more of the same. It's got a complement without taking away from the main dish.
Sure.
You don't want them to feel stupid for buying the main dish because the side was actually better.
That's it.
You know, and that happens. Yep. I mean, I've been through funnels where that happens a lot. It's like, well, can I just have this? I don't want the, that's what I really wanted.
Right.
Yeah. And you feel like you've been taken advantage of. Yes.
Yeah. Or something. I will say they were holding back.
Sorry, Sean.
No, I was just saying, it feels like they were holding back on you instead of helping you.
That's it. And look, if you're going to get in business, you got to understand what you're doing is you're acquiring long-term customers. There's a lot of internet marketers that are going to have a rude awakening 6 months or a year from now. They realize they have no business. None of their customers like them.
Why do you say that?
Well,
are you saying that from a macro, like something's happening in the industry, or just because that's about how long it takes before you get found out?
it's kind of combination. It's more of a sense of I've seen how many people have come and gone in the last 10 years, Sean, guys with big multi-million dollar businesses that are just off the face of the earth, right? Because all they had was a promotion. There was no brand. And this is where the emergence of brand used to be a dirty word for direct marketers. Ah, you don't need a brand. Nowadays, no, you need a brand. You need to stand for something. Your customers have to like you because there's 50 other people selling the same thing you got. And if you don't have a relationship, you do not have a business. And that's where, you can trick people on your first upsell or get them into your funnel and get their first $100, but then you're done. And you're much better off building a relationship and then having four or five other great products to follow. That's my philosophy anyway.
I agree 100%. I've been saying since I got into, copywriting in 2008, like I've never been the one that's like teetotaler direct response. Like, I'm like, no, man, these branding guys, they know something. Like,
right.
They're the biggest companies in the world. The biggest brands are the biggest companies in the world. And there's legitimacy. I understand it's harder. It's more expensive to brand and all those kind of things, but you can do direct response and be branding as you build your direct response based business.
Right.
Like, it's not one or the other.
Absolutely.
You know, Dan Kennedy was kind of that was his enemy, right? It's big branding and stuff. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, he's trying to sell stuff and sell direct response, but the truth is it's put, you know, have a nice solid brand. Like, don't overdo it and not get started because you don't have a brand, but like, get that branding element in there. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the days of direct response, ugly pages, you know, that Dan Kennedy used to talk about, those days are gone. Yeah. Like, with Canva, with like, your stuff's got to look sharp. It just does.
If there's any competitors out there for you, yeah, it's important. Well, and you know, I'm like a total fanboy for Harman Brothers, because they have proven to us you can have branding and direct response, you know, from their ads selling everything from Purple Mattress to, you know, like, they've nailed that hybrid. And it's really exciting to see what's possible when you can.
And they use humor, which you're not supposed to use in copy.
That's right. That's right.
Of course, they use video, so it's different. Like, there's some stuff they do that you could not pull off in copy, you know, print copy alone, text copy. Jonathan, you have anything else? We're kind of at our time.
Nope. I'm good, man. Yeah. So I think Corey, my internet is slowly fading.
So Corey, where can people find out more about you and what you do? I know you don't take most people. You've got like 6 waiting rooms they have to work their way through before they can get to you. 14 velvet ropes.
Mostly that's because I'm too lazy to build my own website.
So if they wanted to start down that gauntlet to work with you, like, where would they start?
Just go to growfastmarketing.com and there's a contact form there and I'll get it.
Cool.
And I'm happy to, you know, mention that you're from you guys, you're part of your tribe, and I'm more than happy to talk to people and help them out if I can.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, my beer was very good. It got better. Like, these dark, heavy beers, they just get better throughout the show. Okay. I don't know. It could be the 11% alcohol. I don't know. They seem to get better, but it's been a cool conversation, and we'll have to have you back Corey. And
definitely.
Jonathan, I'll let you take us out.
Corey, it's been fun, man. Enjoyed having you on. Appreciate you coming on and sharing with us today.
It's been my pleasure. And Jonathan, we'll have to have some more conversation when your internet's up.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny time right now. I'm kind of in a no man's land. But we'll, like Sean said, we'd love to have you back on, continue the conversation another time and talk some more about funnels.
Anytime. This has been a blast. It's rare to get like minds coming together. I can see why you guys do this. It puts you in touch with some cool people.
Yeah.
And I got to witness the first 5-star beer. So like,
there you go.
Good.
Wow. Still awesome. 5. In fact, I'll just tell you, I clicked off my camera and snuck to the fridge and grabbed another. It was so
good. Uh-oh.
Dude, that's legit. Okay.
Guess the kids are packing the rest of the evening.
That's right. I'm done. All right, guys. Well, thanks to all of our listeners. You can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, you name it. Sean, it's been fun. Corey, thanks again, man. We'll see you again on the show.